The Unruffled Beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story? The coolest place to be because it's the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. Right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, along with Jacob Reiner, working the boards. You know, as of 5 this afternoon, we completed our fall fun drive. Yay! So the hard sell's over, but the soft sell kind of lingers on as I remind all of you to go online anytime to kpft.org to make your commitment to public radio in your lives, in our community, and especially to the magical mix of human recreation that we call storytelling. The depth of gratitude, folks, that I want to convey to all of you really isn't possible, but I want to continue to try to find the right words, and I really will. But generous donations by Ilya, Brian, Bill, and Rosemary last week really catapulted us past our goal, but it was your collective comments that warmed my heart. Comments like, awesome show, best program in Houston. Well, I don't know about that, but thank you. Thank goodness for weekly stories. Your show makes me wish it's always Thursday. And unlike the make-believe in fanciful fairy tales, these testimonials are not make-believe. You, my listeners, rock. Thank you a million times over. Last week marked the third return appearance for Hardwood Taylor and Chris Gorman, and tonight I bring you another repeat guest teller. It is Dr. Walter Blanchard, President of Corporate Development Solutions and Adjunct Professor of Communication at the UH Downtown, where he teaches persuasion, conflict, and interviewing, just to name a few. He earned a doctorate in human and organizations from Fielding Graduate University. You know, that's a school that may not be on the radar for many, but it is a highly touted institution that caters particularly to adult learners. Walter told stories that fused storytelling and business during his first appearance on June 9th of 2014, and having written a dissertation entitled Organizational Storytelling, The Social Construction of Reality, you can certainly understand why. I'm glad you're here, Walter.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure. It really, really is. Tell us about the mission of your company.
My company is involved in the communication field. We, Corporate Development Solutions, is a consulting firm that focuses on organizations that have difficulty in organizing themselves. Many times a company will do well for a while or when they start up, but we'll run into difficulties. Mm-hmm. And I'm brought in when the things go bad.
Yeah. And this is going to sound very profound, but so many people talk about organizational problems. Well, organizational problems are people problems.
Exactly.
Buildings don't speak to themselves or not speak to themselves, right? It's
no,
always
they
a
don't.
Person problem. Now, you were discovered, and I do mean discovered because Shannon ambushed you, I know, at the Moth a little bit time ago. And what was the theme tonight when you were at the Moth?
It was called Karma.
Karma, yeah. And remind us, what was that story about?
Well, it was a story about the fact that one night when I was a young man, my father and I were the first responders to a fatal accident on the highway.
I remember that.
I
remember that.
Two cars ran together and some extraordinary things happened.
What prompted you to walk into the Moth the first time?
I was curious. I read about it in the newspaper, wondered what it would be like. Mm-hmm. Didn't expect to go and tell a story, but walked in and they said, would anybody like to? And I threw my name in the hat and they picked me up.
That's always the case. If you don't want to tell a story, you'll be picked.
I was happy to do it.
Right. And if you're right, you just have to walk in there saying, I really, really want to tell a story, then you won't be picked. That's the way it is. Now, give us a feel for what your story is about tonight. I know that that tonight you're going to tell a couple of stories that I requested, and I hope you don't mind that because those stories really did make an indelible impression on me when you told them at the Houston Storyteller Story Swap a couple of months ago. Now, for me, there were stories about youth, and you pointed out very eloquently and appropriately that they also embrace serendipity. And you're right. Now, serendipity is a peculiar thing in my mind, you know, because it's conceived as an aptitude for making desirable discoveries by accident. And that sounds a little oxymoronic to me because aptitude suggests a skill set, and skills uncovered by an accident, who knows and who cares, is really what I'm saying. But I love this story. And your first story is about meeting the astronaut John Glenn, right?
That's right.
Let's hear the story. This is great.
All right. Thank you. I was a Boy Scout growing up, and I loved it. My youth was spent outdoors a lot with my father and the Boy Scouts and camping and going to the woods and building fires and earning merit badges and things like that. It was something many boys had. I was lucky enough to earn an Eagle Scout award. Only about one out of 150 boys gets that, and I fancied myself a pretty good camper. What I didn't expect, though, was that one afternoon, a friend of mine in my Boy Scout troop called me and said, I'm going to a photo shoot, and there's supposed to be an astronaut there. And if you want to come along, you can. He said, wear your best uniform. So I went to the closet and found that my mother had taken my best uniform and taken it to the cleaners. And the only uniform I had was, frankly, a raggedy old green uniform that could see in its better days. It's the only thing I had to wear. I put it on, put my cap on, and put the necktie on that we wore in those days. We headed over to the photo shoot. Ironically, I didn't expect to find myself in a place where there was a legitimate astronaut. And as you remember, the original Mercury astronauts included a number of household names. Some of the listeners may not remember the names that were there, but they were Scott Carpenter, Gordon Cooper, John Glenn, Virgil Grissom, Walter Schirra, and Alan Shepard, and Deke Slayton. They were all my heroes.
We're looking for boomers or people who have read a book. Yeah, I wonder if it's right.
That's correct. Right, but right. If you grew up in Houston and the Manned Spacecraft Center, NASA, it was all in the newspapers on a daily basis, very much like a sports team was. We watched the progress of the different programs, the Mercury program, the Gemini program, the Apollo program, and they were really fun to be a part of, if not more than just by extension. So they went to this photo shoot, and the photographer introduced me to the astronaut, John Glenn. He was not a big man. He was about 5'10", but he was firm. He was a Marine, as you probably remember, Hank, and he flew 150 combat missions over two wars and highly decorated. And like most of his cohorts, he had a great background, and he'd been picked for the astronaut corps. Well, I didn't expect to be in the room with him, much less be told by the photographer that my friend, who had on a dress uniform with all the braids and whistles, was too tall to stand in for the photo. And the photographer said, would you like to be in the photo? And, of course, I said yes. Came into the photo. He shot many pictures. My friend on the sidelines fumed as he watched me stand next to the astronaut. And they had a Boy Scout and a Cub Scout. What I didn't know was they were going to compose that picture with the original rocket ship on the side, and the theme for the Boy Scouts had been adopted as Scouting is A-OK, Join Today. Wow. A-OK was the call sign from the astronauts as they circle the Earth. Are you well? A-OK. Like that. Now, that was good enough, and that was very enjoyable to be a part of that. And John Glenn was very cordial and wanted to know about us, ask us personal questions. We all kind of crowded around and had some lemonade together, and then finally he was gone. What I didn't expect, though, was they would put together a nationwide campaign. And so that summer, my family started getting phone calls from people, including relatives, that said, there's a billboard in Ohio with your picture on it. There's a billboard in Ohio in Florida with your picture on it. There's a billboard in California with your picture on it. And we called the Boy Scout office, and they said, oh, yeah, that's a nationwide campaign. We're showing it everywhere. And the number of Boy Scouts that signed up that year reached a record level like that. What fun.
That's great. That is great. You have a picture of it? You have a picture
of it? I certainly do have a picture of it.
Where is it? Where is it?
It's on my wall at home.
That's great. And what about the poster?
The poster is part of what the history is.
Amazing. That is amazing. Wow. I'm Hank Rubinchek with Jacob Reiner, and you are listening to So What's Your Story with guest storyteller Dr. Walter Blanchard on listener-sponsored 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Walter, the stories that you told on the program last time centered on the power of stories in business. And shifting just a tad, how do you use stories to enhance your teaching?
Well, I think every good teacher can't help but use stories, if not of their own life, the stories of other people. Human beings communicate by storytelling. We always have. It's the most common way of creating reality among each other. That's what my dissertation was about for my doctorate.
Yeah. Talk about that a little bit, the construction of reality. And this is an important notion because I frequently talk about stories as validating our lives, as being a series of symbols that paint verbal pictures, that recreate episodes in our lives, all that kind of stuff. But give us sort of a synthesis of your dissertation and what you mean by constructing reality through storytelling.
Well, human beings are social creatures. We talk to each other, we watch each other, we pay attention to each other, and we influence each other. A storyteller, whether they're professional or otherwise, can make a reality between a listener. The listener can also make reality between the storyteller. We can trade roles back and forth. Yeah. And if we both communicate, we can reach a conclusion about how things are in the world, and we may change our minds later.
Right.
But there certainly is, for that period of time, a creation of that.
Yeah.
Movies do that. Books do that.
Absolutely. Well said. Very well said. Yeah, well, movies with dialogue do that. You know?
Exactly.
I had this talk with somebody the other day. I said that, you know, a lot of younger people don't have the attention span that they need to watch a movie. And, of course, the argument was, well, my son, my daughter, they watch movies all the time, and their attention span is great. And it's about special effects, right? It's about special effects. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not really the kind of notion that we're thinking about when we're thinking about a story. And that's not criticizing a film with special effects. But, you know, when you tell a story, for me at least, when I tell a story or when I listen to a good story, it's a way of sort of leaving your body and floating up to the ceiling and going somewhere else. And when I listen to a good storyteller, and you're one of them, but when I listen to a good storyteller, I forget about everything else in my life, and I like that. I like that. I like the idea of being very unselfish for a few minutes,
yes,
and giving somebody else the time of day because they matter. And I know that sounds really simple, but you know what I'm saying. And,
well, we bear witness to other people's stories.
Yeah, we are. And it's a wonderful feeling to be able to become engaged that way. Jacob, you're a communication major, and you've mentioned to me how stories help you learn, right?
Yes.
And I know that you were kind of smiling when we talked about special effects, but you know what we're saying, right?
I grew up watching TCM.
Okay.
I watched the classics.
Okay.
I love the stories.
So you understand the difference that we're drawing.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
Great. Now, what can stories do for you as a student?
Simply, it paints a picture. The more you say, the more I can understand. I'm a very visual learner. So the more detailed your story is, the more I can picture it in my mind. And with communication, it works even better because the more storytelling, the more relevant the theory is to me.
Very good. Makes sense. So case studies, illustrations,
absolutely,
metaphorical devices, all that stuff, paint verbal pictures.
Absolutely.
They really are stories, and they're excellent. Case studies.
Yes.
All of that. You know, another thing that really works well for anyone interested in learning to tap into their telling potential is to join the Houston Storytellers Guild, and Jacob's going to tell you when and where they meet. Jacob?
Their monthly story swaps are scheduled for the third Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m., located at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. Check them out at www.houstonstorytellers.org.
Thank you, Jacob. Dr. Warren Holloman, another extraordinary teller, is going to be my guest next week on So What's Your Story, and you're not going to want to miss him, but why in the world would you want to miss anyone, for God's sakes, right? Just plan on tuning in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for your Measure of Magic, only on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. And speaking of future programs, I'd like to ask Jacob to tell us briefly about his idea for our Veterans Day program scheduled for November 5th. Jake is a veteran and a proud one and a good student and a good guy, and he came up with a great idea, and I'm looking forward to it. Tell us a little bit about that, Jake.
Well, on November 5th, we're going to have a special Veterans edition of So What's Your Story in honor of Veterans Day, and we will be hosting three veterans from U of H downtown to tell their experience and what they would like the public to know about Veterans Day. They get the chance by writing a 500-word essay on their experience.
Right, and you're going to be sort of demonstrate? Well, you're going to be giving the instructions to people when? When are you going to kind of dish that out?
That will be coming out tomorrow.
Okay, very good. Excellent, excellent. You have a lot of vets in your class?
I do have a number of vets.
Yeah, they're great.
Not only men, but women, too.
And how would you characterize them? They're good students.
They're good people. They're focused.
They really are.
They served their country, and they came back, and they realized that more education was a valuable thing to have. Yeah. And some of them actually think about going back to the military. They liked it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, our veterans deserve a program all their own, and I appreciate Jacob crafting that plan. Walter, this next story is a story I really love, and I don't want to say a lot, but fellas, listen up, and ladies, have faith. That's all I can say. And by the way, Jacob, you're married. You might want to take notes. I think this is for youngsters like him to take notes. I certainly did. All right? Walter, tell us a story.
All right, great.
This is great.
Hank, I was a high school student, football player, good student, got some breaks along the way, and was able to, because of my athletics, take some extra credits in the summer so that I could have more time during the football season to practice and be there. I found myself in a class where my football coach was the teacher, and the pretty girl that sat across the room from me caught my attention. He noticed it too, and he said, you know, if you'd pay more attention to the civics lesson instead of that blonde girl, you'd probably do better in this class. I knew I was going to make an A anyway, but that's the way he talked to me. So I thought about this blonde girl, this beautiful girl. She was a senior. I also noticed that every time she left the class, some boy was carrying her books. And I came home that day, and I told my mother, I said, boy, there's a great-looking girl in my civics class, and I'd love to ask her out. And my mother said, well, pick up the phone. I said, well, you don't understand. You see, I'm a junior, and she's a senior, and she might turn me down. She said, well, so what if she turned you down? I said, well, you don't grasp this. You know, everybody would know she turned me down because that's how the word gets out at the school. She said, and so what? I said, mother, you just don't get it like that. Well, one thing led to another, and one day after another, I watched that girl out of the corner of my eye, and every day she got prettier looking to me, and I kept thinking, I want to ask her out. And I would come home from time to time after school, and I told my mother, you know, I'm going to ask her out. But every time I reached for the phone, it weighed 1,000 pounds, and I couldn't pick it up because I just feared the rejection. I was a fairly confident guy, but with girls, I was pretty shy. Well, one day I came home from school, and my mother and I were having a Coke there, and the phone rang, and she picked it up. And she said, well, yes, he's right here. Hang on. And my mother handed me the phone, and she said, it's Sue on the phone. And I thought, be still my heart. Sue, my goodness. So I took the phone, and someone said, and by the way, I'd never talked to that blonde girl, so I had no idea what her voice was like. She said, would you like to go to the big dance with me? I said, of course, without any hesitation. She said, well, you'll have to wear a tuxedo. And I said, no problem. And she said, well, that's great. Let's talk in the morning at school, and it will solidify things. I said, okay, good. And, boy, I put the phone down. I felt so great. My mother said, what happened? I said, the very girl I wanted to ask out, the very girl, you know, has called me to ask me out. She said, see what I mean? I mean, you know, why were you ever worried in the first place? So on the way to school the next morning with my friends, we drove together. And I told them that the senior, the most beautiful senior in the class, had asked me to the big dance. Well, these guys thought, man, I don't think you deserve that, but I'm glad you got it, and good for you. We used to meet in the cafeteria like all kids did at most high schools. Walked in that morning, I looked around, and I didn't see that girl, but another girl came walking up. And she said, I'm so glad that you agreed to go to the dance.
Whoa.
It was another Sue.
Oh, boy.
I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. My friends were laughing. And the girl said, what are they laughing about? I said, it's nothing. Don't worry about that. She said, well, we'll go to the dance, and I'm going to give you my address, and here's my phone number. And I went, okay, great. They gave me a hard time. I went home that afternoon and told my mother that the wrong Sue had called me. She said, well, it's not the wrong Sue. It's just another Sue. I said, mother, she said, you are going to take her to the dance. I said, no, I'll take her for sure. So I grumbled. The dance came. The day of the dance, I washed the car, I picked up the corsage I'd ordered for, I picked up the tuxedo, I dressed up, And I went to this girl's house. This girl was a year younger than me, so she was actually 2 years younger than the blonde girl I described earlier in the story. I knocked on the door. Her mother and father were there. And I looked up at the top of the stairs, and this was a different creature. She had her hair done, her fingernails. Her mother had built her a dress. She looked gorgeous. She came down the stairs with a beautiful smile. Her father took two rolls of film on an old Kodak camera with us, the same pose over and over again, with me smiling. We walked out to the car. We went to the dance. She was a delightful date. One thing led to another, and we went out to, you know, dinner with some other people. I didn't know it that we were going out to dinner, and frankly, I was completely broke by the time I had bought the corsage and rented the tuxedo. And somehow she sensed that. And despite everybody ordering lobster and other things, you know, we were all excited, you know, she turned to me and said, "I'm not very hungry. How about you?" And I said, "Not really." So we bought a $2 appetizer, you know, and shared it. And I took her home that night, kissed her on the steps. I know her parents were looking through the blinds. And she said, "I've had the time of my life." And she walked inside. I felt great. I undid my bow tie. I turned the windows down in the car. I drove around for a long time thinking about things. So when I came home that night, my mother was still up. She used to stay up for me. "How was it?" I said, "It was great." She said, "Well, what about that other girl?" I said, "I'm going to call her tomorrow. I don't have any problem with that." I reached for that phone and called it. And that girl said, "I'd be great, be glad to go out with you." And so we went out. And now we've been married 50 years.
That's magnificent. What a great story. I love that. I love that story. And it's so true, too, because, you know, woman being beautiful and you being broke. I mean, isn't that, it just seems to be.
It's classic.
It just seems to be classic. Yeah, well, my wife is the most magnificent woman God ever created. I hope she's listening because it's true. And when you have the right woman, all kidding aside, it's a pretty magnificent thing.
Really
and I
is.
Don't think that happens very often. I mean, I don't have any data to reinforce that, but I don't know, right? Jacob, you love your wife. You got a terrific woman.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, you really do. I met her. She's a terrific woman. But it is not common. It is, I think, very rare, don't you think?
It's too unusual.
Yeah, it is.
I wish it was more. It was more often for more people.
Yeah,
it would happen that way, but
it
doesn't.
Yeah, it does. And I'd like to think that chemistry can work in many different ways. And speaking of chemistry, being the scholar that I am, of course, I looked up chemistry, right? Mm-hmm. And chemistry is not exactly the same as serendipity, but I thought that I might share what Dr. Helen Fisher of Rutgers University, the anthropologist, interestingly enough, says about chemistry. She says there are five types of chemistry. I just thought everybody would be interested. Type one is you tear each other's clothes off chemistry. Less lust and more lust, right? Type two is we're so comfortable together chemistry. You finish each other's sentences. You almost feel like you're talking to yourself, which is probably a good thing because if you do that, you'll never lose an argument. And then there's type three, the we laugh like crazy chemistry. You know, be a clown, I guess. Type four is we're so complimentary chemistry. Now, I don't know about this one. This one doesn't exactly excite me. We're so complementary. Two opposing personas fitting together. You know, the opposite attract thing. I mean, research shows that it's good for a short period of time and then forget about it. It doesn't work. And then type five is, we have so much in common chemistry. Well, then just spend more time with yourself, I guess. I don't know what it is. But I like what Jay Leno says. The other night he says, the most important thing is to marry someone normal. Because when the sex is done, she'll still be crazy. And I thought that really made fabulous sense. Who was the storyteller in your home growing up?
My father.
Yeah, good storyteller?
He was. I grew up with a bunch of people that were Cajuns. My ancestors came to Louisiana from France, and I remember those nights sitting around like the moth, you know, with the moths flickering around the coal oil lamp and sitting around swapping stories. I used to sit and listen to them for hours and hours.
What's unique about Cajun stories?
Well, they're different in one respect. There's a lot of laughter. Even when this matter is serious, they can find humor in it.
Yeah.
And they enjoy telling the same stories over and over again.
Yeah. Love that. What would you say to our listeners who think, I don't have a story about myself worth telling?
Oh, I would argue that they do.
I get that a lot. What would you tell them?
Yeah, I certainly have had that myself. Being an old storyteller, I suppose, I imagine that everybody's got stories in them. And you know, making allowance for shyness and someone who says that I just can't tell a story, which I don't think is true. But I think people, you know, don't realize just how interesting our lives are. There's always a backstory to each one of us. Yeah. Where did we come from? What's our origin? You know, what affected us as children?
Right.
Not always the greatest tales, you know, from the standpoint of things happen that sometimes are not perfect, you know.
Right. Yeah. And but I think those are all very important catalysts. Jacob, you ever think about how you keep, you know, since you've been taking some communication courses and working on the show, you ever think about your own stories, how you document your own stories, ways of doing that?
Yes, and you've mentioned it in class, diaries or journals.
Yeah, diaries, and journals.
That was one thing I kind of looked back on my past and said I never really journaled. I did once when we went to China during the summer, but I never did again.
I like to use a lifeline exercise in class, in the storytelling class. I give people an opportunity to think about significant things in their life. They don't have to be positive or negative, and sometimes they're very neutral, like the death of someone. What do you do with that? And it's amazing what they do, because they can think chronologically and they can think about names and dates and events, and each one of them turns out to be a magnificent story, and even they surprise themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they realize very quickly that their stories really do validate their lives, very, very much so. Now, you teach a conflict class, you teach a persuasion class, interviewing class. When I teach interviewing, I tell students all the time that when you walk in and you respond to a question, you're asked, are you a good leader? The idea of saying yes isn't going to cut it. You've got to be able to give a case study, right?
You got to tell them why you're a good leader.
Yeah, you do. And it better be clear and it better be crisp, but there has to be a narrative.
Exactly.
I think narratives are really very, very critical. Absolutely. Yeah,
every listener responds to a story better than just a static set of facts.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. Why do we just offer facts then?
That's easy.
But we buy into that.
I think we're lazy.
Yeah, we are.
And part of it has to do with our misunderstanding that the story could do a lot for us, and you know, we're not willing to tell it.
As long as it's coherent and it resonates, it's going to work.
I agree.
Walter, thank you so much, as always. Thank you so much for your insights and your wisdom and for delivering to us the kind of message that I think we rarely hear, the kind expressed by writer Lois McMaster Buchholz. It's a bizarre but wonderful feeling to arrive dead center of a target you didn't even know you were aiming for. And I thought that, right, you like that one?
I do, and I would like to add one last thing, Hank.
You.
The woman that I married, the one that, the other Sue, she was my serendipity.
Isn't that great? Wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks.
What a great insight. Scooter's up next. Speaking of insights, with the inner side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Be sure to make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story, and be sure to ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and we're just going to keep on bringing them to you. You better be good to each other. And until next week, Dr. Hank reminding you that it is never too late, my friends, to live very happily ever after. Peace.
KPFT has just completed our on-air membership drive. If you are one of the many listeners who renewed or joined this drive, thank you very much. Many new people went from listeners to listener sponsors, and we want to welcome you to the KPFT family. Before you know it, your membership envelope will arrive in the mail. The great feeling you get when you support KPFT feels even better once you drop that check in the mail. And we want to remind you that you can donate to KPFT at any time by calling 713-526-4000, extension 314, or by going to kpft.org. You are listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT.